KPCW News Time, now 8:13. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. No new snow, but it sounds like we could get some maybe later this week. Anyway, lifts turning at 9 o'clock for the final week of skiing at both Park City and Deer Valley. Park City reporting 36 of its lifts open, 268 of the runs, 105 of those groomed overnight, including Assessment and Snow Dancer. 21 lifts running at Deer Valley, 97 of the runs, 53 of those groomed overnight, including Solid Muldoon and Lost Boulder. Stay tuned. Coming up in just a minute, we'll be checking in with the superintendent of Park City Schools, Ember Conley. Later on in the hour, Tom Kelly with his final report of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association winter season. Also coming up, we'll be reporting seven members of Park City's lodging and restaurant businesses recognized last week during the fourth annual Black Diamond Awards. And the Jupiter chairlift at Park City Mountain Resort malfunctioned in mid-January. A former employee telling KPCW someone was injured in that accident. We'll have details on that. First, joining me now in the studio, the superintendent of Park City Schools, Ember Conley. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the Park City Board of Education meeting in a special regular session tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. First up is a discussion with regard to the tentative budget. It talks about tax strategy. So what do you mean by tax strategy?
Right. So if you recall, we entered into a three-year negotiation for compensation last year. And then last year as well added several classroom positions that were much needed to be able to reduce our class sizes for our students. So what we're looking at this year is continuing along addressing our same, keeping focused on our same needs, which is closing the academic achievement gap, making sure that we have strong English language arts programs for strong English foundation. And so there are some additions to that. Again, also being the year of safe and healthy, there is a couple of positions around counseling, mental health, and so that focus continues as well. And so for this year's budget, it would require us to go out for a tax increase, and it is now really at the board's conversation discussion level to figure out what that tax strategy looks like.
Okay, so at this point, we still don't know what the numbers are.
Right, and that's one of the things that we have. If you look at the agenda, it'll say tentative superintendent's budget, which means as an administration and by code, I'm required to put together a budget based on the needs of the district. And so now it is the board's responsibility, given their roles and responsibility, to take a look at that budget, make decisions, and then start moving forward on how to fund it.
So is your plan to have a budget ready to be adopted by the time you leave?
It is, right. And in fact, we wanted to be able to finish it within the next couple weeks because of recruitment and being able to ensure that we have the best candidates in our candidate pool, because many of the school districts are already out there, you know, hitting the ground recruiting. So that's been the goal of both administration and the governing board.
So when is your last day? I mean, we've been reporting June 30th, but the Arizona paper's reporting something earlier than that.
Right. So there, with that, you know, my contract still is June 30th, and my goal is to be able to continue having a seamless transition between myself and the new superintendent. And I do know the board is going into closed session next board meeting on April the 17th for about 3 hours with the consulting firm and being able to choose the candidates to begin their interviews. So the interesting thing with Mesa is that the superintendent of Mesa, his last day is May the 25th. And so I'm starting to, of course, try to transition and learn as much from him. He's been there for 30 years and very well respected. And so it really is a balancing act right now. But I would say there certainly isn't anything that's falling through the cracks here. We have a strong team. We're really focusing on making sure nothing falls through.
He's been superintendent 30 years?
He's been the superintendent, I believe, for 8 years, but he's been in the district for 30.
Okay. So even 8 years is a long time
it
as
is.
Far as superintendents go, huh?
It is. It is. And very well respected.
Yeah. And tell me, what do you know what's going on with teacher walkouts? I think in the Phoenix School District, maybe not the Mesa.
Right. Yet. It is. So across Arizona, Arizona is one of the lowest paid salaries for teachers. And their tax structure is very different to fund education there. And And I think that, honestly, looking at across the United States, every state is going to have to look at how to fund education at a higher rate, because we're seeing it. And we've seen it even this year in our small microcosm of Park City, where our candidate pool for teachers aren't as big because of the shortage. Well, then you look at, well, where's our principals? Well, there aren't teachers, so there aren't teachers going into administration. And so it's just this trickle-down effect of being able to pay people for what their responsibilities are. And, you know, I'll even say 20 years ago when I entered the classroom, things are different. And there is a lot more expectations and the stress level of what's put on our teachers.
Well, and I was going to mention that because schools just don't seem to be about education anymore. And instead of resources going to teachers now, I mean, even here in the Park City School District, we're putting lots of money towards the mental health of our students. We're putting lots of money towards the safety of our students. So that pulls it away from
it staff. Does, you know, and I think there was a really clear defining moment last year for me with negotiations. And I kept hearing, I mean, I'm not in the classroom. I love being in our schools, but I'm not in the classroom. And so when a teacher said, look, I can teach and I can be prepared and have that content ready. What I'm not able to do is when a family comes in and says, you know, my brother tried to commit suicide over the weekend and we're dealing with the stress of that. And now I have the siblings in my classroom and I'm worried about them. Those are things we weren't trained in teacher school. And I think that really has added some significant layers. And I think also Park City is different in this sense. But at the same time, schools have been the expectation to change and address community issues. You know, well, they're with you. You need to fix it. And in reality, this is, you know, our children. It takes all of us to educate our children.
So back to the tax increase, we still need one in spite of seeing more money from the state legislature than we'd seen in years, decades maybe.
Right, and we were very pleased. You know, right at the nth hour, our schools now and the legislators came together and added some funds to that. And it looks like we'll get about $400,000 from that compromise. They did increase the WPU to about 2%. So that was really along what Todd Haber's projections were going to be. So that helps us. But again, we've been a leader in paying our teachers and our administrators what they deserve and setting that bar high for the rest of the districts in the state. So it is going to require a tax increase.
And then in terms of the timing of that, we have to have a truth and taxation, what, in June?
In
or
June,
August?
Right. And there's a 10-day notice that has to go out, public notice, and then the hearing itself. So, it, you know, and then it revolves around what we already have for meeting dates. So I'm going to say by the end of May, you'll definitely have all of those dates and those times for the hearings and then moving forward into June.
At 9:30 then tomorrow, a safety review and update. Cole Smith, a safety consultant, providing the board with an update of updates throughout the district. What can you tell us about the threat made last week by the Treasure Mountain Junior High School student?
You know, we have refined our protocol for any threat, and that is any time that we receive a threat of violence against school and or students, we take it very seriously. The very first phone call we make is to law enforcement, and we have a parallel protocol that we use both with the sheriff's department and the police department. So what that looks like is notification of parents, going to the home, making contact with the child who made the threat and the parents, asking to search the home for weapons. The law enforcement certainly can't go in without permission. I'm going to say 90% of the time the parents say, please take a look. We want to be able to work cooperatively. There's always a 10% that says no. In those situations, if the law enforcement feels that there really is access, they can get a search warrant, which takes a little bit longer. And then from there, we tell law enforcement as well, we're working cooperatively. Please tell the student and the parent that they're not allowed to be back on campus until a full investigation is complete. We make the same contact, so it really is a double communication. And then we start our investigation, which sometimes can take an hour, but most of the time it takes several days.
So a threat is a threat. I mean, was this made social media? This was a face-to-face kind of threat.
You know, this one particularly was a face-to-face. And again, every situation like this is different. And I think that's a really hard thing for parents to understand of well, why didn't you do X, Y, and Z? Well, every single situation is different. And we have to follow the protocols. But then at the same time, we have to be able to be flexible enough to address the individual threat. So this one was individual, was overheard, and we start doing the investigation, which is asking, you know, what'd you see, what'd you hear, written statements, contacting parents, et cetera.
Did it involve a weapon?
You know, this one in particular basically was just a threat of, and you know, this is the hard thing, especially for students when they get angry or when they're just not thinking straight, to make those statements of, I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to shoot the school up, or I'm sick of you, and be really careless with their words. And in the world that we have today, they can't be.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, a point I'd like to make, is that a threat is a threat. But even if a kid thinks it's a joke and doesn't mean he or she is serious about it, how do we let them know that we don't get to joke about this anymore?
Well, we've had those situations, and we have the same protocol, and law enforcement is showing up at their houses and making contact with their parents. And the moment that happens, we also follow our safe schools policy, which is very clear in holding a student hearing. So we do the innocent until proven guilty, but at the same time, that hearing is presenting all of the facts. There has been, and you know, in my tenure here, a couple of different situations where the students have just not used their brain very well and made those statements. And then some where we have been able to intervene and get the student help that they've needed.
Yeah, and there's always a fine line between the public's right to know and somebody's privacy. But if the community is going to learn something from this, I mean, what's the lesson here?
You know, first of all, I think that the community continues to be an active member rather than a finger pointer. And that is, if they hear it, if they see it, they're letting law enforcement in the school know. And they realize that we have a protocol to follow. And there's trust being put into administration to do that. And I think, you know, even when we're on the city buses, or if we're at the city park, if we see those things, if we hear those things, we are getting more reports directly to us.
Is the student back at school?
You know, at this point, I know our investigation is still underway. So no.
You can't answer?
No, he or she is not.
Okay. Utah law allows for loaded weapons to be brought to schools under a concealed carry mm-hmm. permit. What does that mean? I mean, does that mean teachers and staff can have a weapon on them, but it has to be hidden?
Concealed, absolutely.
So when can a weapon legally be pulled out in the school?
Yeah, that's a hard one.
We don't know?
Yeah, that, you know, legally, the law states that anyone in a school, whether they're an employee or not, can have a concealed weapon if they have the proper permits and training. And with that, you know, the questions, and this is, as you know, a huge national topic around that they should be able to pull that weapon at any time. Now, the counter argument that we hear from law enforcement is, you come into a building, you see a weapon out, pulled, what's law enforcement going to do? And you know, I think that's the real risk that we're seeing of, while there might be someone that's fully trained and able to do that, are they at the level of law enforcement to be able to fully handle that threat?
So is there any talk about whether the PCEA, this is the teachers union, will be taking a position on school safety?
You know, I anticipate that there definitely will be conversations. We meet monthly with our employee groups, both the classified and our certified employees. This is something that's on everyone's mind. We have a strong district safety team as well as an executive safety team. And working with Cole Smith, that has, I mean, his background and safety is really impressive. And we've improved greatly just even in the last year. So, you know, I think it's a conversation. I think it's something that we want to work cooperatively with our teachers.
So the we had thought that the work in the entryways at the elementary was going to be done over holiday break and then open and done in January. Still not done, y'all, right?
They aren't. And a huge frustration, I'm going to say on my part, we've ran into, first of all, some procurement. The procurement laws have changed that anything over $1,000 has to go to get written bids, and then anything over a certain threshold has to go out to a full RFP. So we've ran into some hindrances there. I would also say statewide, the state auditor, and it has, and this is for every district, not just ours, but has really has a critical eye on very specific funding, which at this point we have to make sure everything is meticulous. And Todd Hobber, as you know, is very good at that. So procurement has got in the way. Now, as you know, contractors are at high demand. And so we're having trouble getting actual workers. And then there's been delays of materials, so countertops, windows. And then the other thing was we had some plans put in place. And when collaboratively we said, let's get a safety expert in here just to do one more look, there have been some few minor tweaks. Well, those minor tweaks have then sent it out back out to the architects. The architects have to get their drawing. As you see, this has just become a frustration.
So once
when are they finished? You're right. They will be finished by the first day of school this next year. And so we are looking at some stopgap measures to make sure that our buildings are secure, that they're safe. As you know, both Summit County, Sheriff Martinez, and Chief Wade with the Park City Police Department have really increased the presence of law enforcement driving through our parking lots, having the lights, walking into schools. That's helped already tremendously.
And we're also holding, what, monthly safety drills?
We do. We have district-wide safety drills. We have one that will be scheduled in the next 2 weeks, so that's kind of a heads-up for parents. This next one will not be parents will not be notified prior. So it's really important that if you haven't signed up for that PCSD chat, that you're signed up so you know it's a drill, here's what's happening, or in the case that it's not a drill.
And that's what we've heard from students and teachers, that when these drills are taking place, students really aren't taking them seriously. I mean, anything we can do about that, or maybe just surprise it on them?
Well, I would say, first of all, it comes down to making sure that our adults in the classrooms and in the buildings know that these are very serious. The more we practice, the better we get in the case of a real emergency. And there has been some warning letters sent out to specific people around making sure that we take these serious with students.
I want to talk about a decision the board's scheduled to make tomorrow, the fee schedule adoption. The board has reviewed the fee schedule, and they've talked about eliminating fees for certain academic and even electives. The board will decide whether or not we charge high school students for AP courses, labs, electives. What's the thinking here?
First of all, it's to be able to make sure that we level the playing field, regardless of the amount of money that a family may or may not have. And so it really is looking at that social equity piece that the board is very interested in addressing.
So what does that mean? That we do nobody pays anything?
Well, that's something that we're looking at, and looking at the philosophies of the board. You know, looking at their major goals, of course, is safe and healthy, and continuing community engagement, also with improving academic success. And so, you know, the money piece is an issue. Now, I will say, with our advanced placement classes, there are fee waivers already set up for students. I would also say that at any time that any student comes in and there's hardship waivers that we have that have been used and are in place already.
Business Administrator Todd Hauber has told us that fees and donations add up to about $1.9 million. So if we don't charge for these fees, where does that money come from to pay for it?
Well, there's a couple different ways. One, you know, restructuring the budget where it would come out of M&O, which maintenance and operation, you have some leverage with doing a tax increase, or cutting different positions, programs to be able to pay for it.
And they're scheduled to make a decision?
One right, or the other? Right. It's by law that we have to adopt the fee schedule.
All right. And then finally, there's a board training session planned starting at about 10:15. Marianne Billington from Action Leadership Group is facilitating training that creates a collaborative and team-oriented environment to effectively lead academic success. This is happening at your request?
You know, this is something that the board sees as they've had turnover on the board and new members and, of course, getting ready to go through election, that they've been they've requested that. So we followed our procurement, went out for bid, the company that has been secured. So tomorrow what they're doing is basically coming in to plan. And so it'll take about an hour, get some goals of what the board wants to be able to address, and then she will come back and work with the board in like 2 to 3 hour sessions or a full day. Again, that's what they'll decide tomorrow.
Yeah, you essentially beg them to get some kind of training.
You know, I think it's really important as a new board that they're able to cohesively move together with administration. To be able to know roles and responsibilities. It's a big job, and there's a lot of details associated with the jobs that they've been elected to do, as well as what we're required to do.
So what is the training involved, you know?
You know, I think a lot of this is, again, working collaboratively and cooperatively together, how to set goals and achieve those goals.
And what should we expect? I mean, I guess you're not going to be around to see the results, or will you?
Well, you know, we definitely are. While I am taking another position, we definitely will remain community members at large. We love Park City and are going to keep our home here. And so my biggest desire is that the work that we've done and the achievements that we've made together with our team, that the board's able to continue those and get to that next level that they're desiring. They've been elected to make change, and they've been elected to do those things that they see fit. And so I think this is an opportunity for them to have discussions in an open meeting and figure out how to work best together.
Okay. Ember, anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope. Just next week is spring break, and so while a lot of people do travel, please watch out for our children that might be out and about.
Okay. Ember Conley is superintendent of Park City Skiing. In the studio with a final report on the U.S. ski and snowboard teams, Tom Kelly. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. It's winding down.
Yeah. Yeah. So we wanted to have you come in and talk a little bit about some of the top storylines of this season. You want to start with the snowboarders?
Yeah, you know, it was a really interesting season. We talked a lot about the Olympics with the reports from Pyeongchang, but just kind of taking a retrospective look back at an amazing year. And first of all, on the snowboard side, quite a remarkable Olympics, actually. Chloe Kim going in as a 17-year-old phenom, and a lot of people wondering, is she going to be able to handle the pressure, not just of the weight of being one of the top contenders, but going into her father's homeland in Korea and performing in front of those fans, and she just did magnificently. She took the gold medal there and also had won the X Games gold and the Burton U.S. Open gold in January and in March, respectively. So great season for her. Jamie Anderson, a veteran, went in with the weight of having won the slopestyle snowboarding event 4 years earlier in Sochi. She came through with flying colors to double up and win her second straight gold there, and then came back with a silver in the new big air event to close out the Olympics. Red Gerard was someone who probably wasn't on a lot of folks' radar. We certainly were well aware of what his potential was. But again, as a 17-year-old, you always wonder. And he came out on that opening weekend to win the first gold medal for Team USA with his victory in slopestyle snowboarding, following the footsteps of Sage Katzenberg. And I think with Red, just his youth, I mean, not only was he 17, but he looked like he was about 10. And coming home after that gold medal and making the TV rounds and then heading back to Pyeongchang, he really became quite a celebrity. So great to see him pick up the gold and also just missing a medal in the big air. And then, of course, Shaun White. I've watched Shaun White now over the last 12 years at Olympics, winning 2 gold, finishing 4th in Sochi, and coming back a completely transformed person. It was a different Shaun White that we saw this year in Pyeongchang, and he came out in what I think was probably one of the most brutally contested events that we saw in Pyeongchang. I mean, it was back and forth, and you had to absolutely put down a career best run to win in that day. And that's what he did. He picked up his third gold medal, and hats off to him. Really amazing performance by snowboarding this year.
Yeah. Any word whether he's going to retire?
Well, we've talked a lot about that, and I know there's a lot of us that hope that he'll be on the scene here for the World Championships, which come to Park City February 1st to 10th next year. I think right now his focus is going to shift over to summer games. He's interested in skateboarding, and he'll be a medal contender when skateboarding makes its debut at the Olympics coming up in Tokyo in 2020. So we hope to see him back again. It's really hard to say. He's had a long career. I remember when he was just 15 years old and almost made the Salt Lake City Olympics. He got bumped out by J.J. Thomas at the last minute. J.J. went on to become Sean's coach for the last 4 years and really helped him to that gold medal. So hopefully we will, but we were all pretty excited for Sean. He was the real deal and a genuinely wonderful person to be with during that time in Pyeongchang.
Okay. And then with the free ski category, David Wise, boy, I remember seeing that one. It was like, guy, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? And waited till the third run again to do it.
Well, David Wise, an amazing athlete who kind of works under the radar a lot. He's not as flashy as some of the others in the sport. He won the gold medal 4 years ago together with teammate Matty Bowman as they swept gold in the men's and the women's halfpipe skiing. It was a little tougher this time around for Matty. She just couldn't quite put that run together. But David, he did put it together in his final run to take Olympic gold. And again, winning a second gold medal is so difficult. David came into the Olympics having won the X Games. And right behind him in Pyeongchang was Alex Ferreira from Aspen, Colorado, who also makes his home training here in Park City. He picked up silver. He also was X Games silver, and a great event for him. And Britta Sigourney, who was another one of those who made the team 4 years ago in Sochi and had a really good top 10 finish but wanted more, she worked so hard over the last few years, particularly on her amplitude and really trying to put forward a much different program. And she picked up the bronze medal in halfpipe skiing. Folks, if you're going to the Thin Air Festival this weekend, I will have Britta along with Chief of Sport Luke Bodensteiner from U.S. Ski and Snowboard on an athlete panel to kick off at PC Live. That's going to be coming up on Thursday night at 7 o'clock if you're going to the Thin Air Festival. Britta, by the way, grew up in Carmel, California, but now makes Park City home, chose this resort to be close to good training.
Yeah, like you say, I mean, she did come back from some pretty serious injuries and really worked hard to get back.
Yeah, she really did, and really proud of what she accomplished, and she is as well. I do think we'll see her stick around for another 4 years.
Okay, and then in freestyle.
Freestyle is tough this year. Not quite the results that we had been hoping for. But one really super bright spot this year was Jaylin Kauf. She did not get that Olympic medal. She ended up with 3 wins, 5 podiums, including a win in Deer Valley, 2nd overall in the season-long mogul standing. So good season for her. And a lot of us have been looking for, you know, who's going to be that next Hannah Carney coming along. Hannah was just really, truly a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime athlete, but a big step up for Jaylin Kauf.
Yeah, and we used to rule the moguls and the aerials. We just don't have the development team out there.
You know, it's hard to say. We certainly are not at the level that we were a few years ago. We've got some bright spots. We've got some amazing athletes coming up. I think one of the great stories this year was Casey Andringa just coming from nowhere to qualify for the World Cup, first of all, through the selection process in December, and then qualifying for an Olympic spot and actually giving it a really good go for the medals. And I think, too, just from the Park City side, a shout-out to Maddie Olson for her performance at the Olympic, top aerialist in sixth place and taking it right down to the superfinal.
And then turning to Alpine, of course, Park City's Ted Ligety back in action, but not the season I'm guessing he was hoping for.
No, not the season Ted was looking for, but it was a good comeback year. I mean, he's been really, really banged up the last few seasons. Hadn't been on a podium in a couple of years, and he got that one checked off with a third-place finish in Garmisch just before the Olympics. Ended up with 3 top 10s this year, but that's just not where Ted wants to ski. He's going to continue. He'll be back next year with World Championships coming up in Åre, Sweden at the Olympic, 15th in the giant slalom, 5th in the Alpine combined. So I think we'll see Ted back next year. You know, it's tough, you know, the sport that he's in, particularly in the giant slalom. It's very, very deep internationally, and you've got to be right at that top level. But I think he made it up some notches, and certainly a better season for him than he's had the last couple. Hopefully that will be inspiration for him to move on and keep going.
Yeah, part of it is, a lot of it is confidence and coming back from an injury sometimes that wavers, the confidence.
It does. I mean, confidence is a huge factor. And a lot of us thought, well, okay, he's on the podium in Garmisch. He's going to be good for the Olympics. But it's just such a much higher level. So I think we'll see Ted back and look forward to watching him compete for more world championship gold in RE Sweden next February.
Okay. And Michaela Schifrin, boy, as long as she stays healthy, she's just a force to be reckoned with.
Well, amazing. 12 World Cup wins. I mean, just think about that. 12 World Cup wins in one season. She just turned 23 years old. She has 43 World Cup wins. Lindsay, by the way, has 81. So Michaela rapidly closing in on that. She's now fifth on the all-time win list. She bumped up a couple of spots this year. Olympic gold and silver, kind of a little bit under the radar, just the way the events came off. And, you know, that was a little bit frustrating, I know, for her. But she really had an amazing Olympics with a gold and a silver medal. She picked up her second straight World Cup overall title, won that a year ago. She said, I'm not sure I really deserve this because there were so many women who were out. This year, they were all back. It was hotly contested, but no one could come close to her. She won her fifth World Cup slalom crystal globe in 6 years. And again, she just turned 23 years old.
Yeah. And then there's Lindsey Vonn, again, a pretty decent season. Is she in it for at least another year?
Oh, she's in it until she gets that record, I tell you. She's motivated. Now, if you think back, Leslie, to November, we're talking about her at Lake Louise. The opening of the season was an absolute disaster for Lindsey Vonn. She goes into Lake Louise kind of expecting to get three wins, and she gets skunked. And it took a while for her to really find herself this year. And it was the first season she'd been injury-free, really, in three or four. So she comes back and ultimately wins five World Cup titles. Five World Cup wins, seven podiums, almost wins the downhill title. Really came down to a matter of just a few points, but she missed that just by the narrowest of margins, and now she's just four wins away from Ingemar Stenmark's record. I think what we need to look for with Lindsey Vonn right now is to see what she's going to do next year. Number one, she still wants to ski against the men. Number two, she wants that Stenmark record, the most wins of all time, male or female. So she'll have some decision-making to do over the summer, and International Ski Federation and along with us at U.S. Ski and Snowboard will have some thoughts, too, as to how we can help her with those goals.
Well, I thought the decision was going to be made next month with regard to her racing against the men.
Well, she has some decisions to make pretty quickly because the calendar will go into place in May. So that's coming up next month at the FIS meetings in Greece. You know, whether or not the men's thing gets decided, then the World Cup calendar will get decided. So, you know, if she does want to do it in Lake Louise, she'll have that schedule. And there's really no specific timeline that it has to be done in May. It hasn't been a topic right now, but it will come back on board as a topic in the next month as we lead up to those meetings. I think, though, that she's going to be more focused right now on getting those four more World Cup wins to match Stenmark and then go beyond him.
Okay, so that four ties
would establish her as the winningest athlete, male or female, of all time.
Okay, and where the freestyle team kind of has slid over the years, the cross-country team has certainly ramped things up in a great year there.
Very gratifying, and I know the whole world knows Jesse Diggins and Keegan Randall because they won the team sprint gold medal at the Olympics. But looking behind that story, there's a lot more stories this year. Number one, Jesse Diggins finished second in the overall World Cup standings. That's never happened for an American woman before. Bill Koch did win it on the men's side back in 1982. By the way, Bill Koch and Jesse and Keegan did get together last week at Craftsbury, Vermont during the U.S. championships there, and that was a good get-together for them. Jesse finished third in the distance World Cup. Sophie Caldwell third in the sprint World Cup. And Sadie Bjornsson sixth in the overall and sixth in distance. Those are pretty remarkable records. And right now, if you look at who are the strongest cross-country teams on the women's side, it's really Sweden, Norway, and the United States. And we've never been able to say that before. So quite an accomplishment that goes well beyond just that gold medal in Pyeongchang.
So this is your final team report, yeah? You're retiring?
This is my final team report. I am not retiring. I am relaunching, and we'll talk about that in another session. But so this is the last time I will be here representing U.S. Ski and Snowboard. And just want to thank everybody for their following us for so many years. I want to touch on a couple of other items before we go. Number one, everybody come on out to the Olympian Parade at Friday at 5 o'clock down Main Street. Bring the family, bring the kids, athlete autographs. Ted Ligety will be there, among others. So great time, 5 o'clock this Friday. And also on a sad note, Sad to report that Bob Beatty, the founding coach of the U.S. ski team, passed away this weekend. Bob was 85 years old and a really important person in our sport, important person to me, and he will be remembered always for the passion that he put in. And I hope that I have put in that passion in bringing you these reports for so many years, and I'll be back to talk more about the next phase of my career. But thanks to everybody for listening the last 30 years.
Yeah. Sounds crazy, doesn't it, huh?
It does.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate your commitment to getting the news out, Tom. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
We'll talk to you in a few weeks. This is the Local News Hour here on KPCW.